Good afternoon. Today I have with me Agata Gebeck, engineering manager at Netflix. Agata, welcome to Managers Club.
Thank you so much, Vidal. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you as well. Agata, we met when we worked at Uber, but could you share with the audience a little bit about your background and how you got into leadership?
Yes, sure. So my background is in computer science, software engineering. I started my career actually in academia. I went deep into some distributed systems, and I was always more interested in applied science rather than theoretical science. So I ended up building simulations and systems for transportation systems and traffic congestion. And so I wanted to apply that science, and I went back to industry and I got a job at Uber, which was super relevant to my research. And that's where I transitioned to be a manager. And at first I worked on many different parts of engineering stack and traffic and routing. We met there at these times. Uber was at hypergrowth stage. I was so fortunate to be a part of it because I just feel like I learned so much, and it was an incredible experience meeting amazing people and building really great things. So this is when I transitioned to be a manager. There was an opportunity and I wasn't sure, is it for me or not, but I will try it out. I will give it 6 months, 12 months to see how it works for me. So I tried it out and I very quickly realized I really liked that role. I was fortunate to be provided with different trainings at Uber and coaching and have great managers. So I learned a lot. And I became a manager and never got back to being an IC, and I'm still manager and I'm enjoying this a lot. It's a definitely different role, but I love it.
What are some of the biggest challenges you face as an engineering leader, Agata?
Yeah, I was reflecting a lot on this because there's so many challenges we all face.
Indeed.
Like, how do I pick the biggest one? I think I will maybe share what's something on top of my mind these days, and probably for many of the leaders as well. So I think it's a burnout, and we know the world, what's going on, and with really long pandemic and everything. It's very, I think, big challenge, the burnout, because it's often, and in the beginning, it's often unnoticed. We neglect it. There's some symptoms, but we may not see or have time or energy or resources to even address them. And then it's often too late. And then engagement drops, health maybe even is compromised. And I think it's better to prevent burnout from happening rather than healing it. So I think it's one of the challenges because it's very prevalent right now.
What do you do to prevent burnout?
It's hard because I burned out myself, I think, a couple of times. And I think if we don't experience this on our own, it's very hard to understand what it means. And there are different ways, different reasons why people burn out. There are different symptoms, different levels of severity. What I'm seeing from my own experience, that there are two ways of preventing it. One is to continuously manage emotions. Being a leader is a very emotional role. Like, we deal with a lot of changes and challenges and problems and conflicts and excitement and pressure and all the things. So I think managing these emotions in terms of actually feeling them, processing them, not denying, not trying to numb them or avoid them, just letting them be felt and processed and seen, I think that's the continuous work that needs to happen. So it doesn't pile up. And two, I think just looking for that early signal, and I think the early signal is the lower engagement. And that's, I think, pretty easy to notice or talk about and learn. So once we start seeing that the engagement on our own or on someone on our team decreases, that's, I think, a flag we should be more paying attention to, that it can cause, like, it can turn into burnout. That's a bigger challenge.
I think that's great. You mentioned emotions because, yes, engineering managers, we operate in the realm of people. So there's disappointment, frustration, anger, all these things. Sometimes we have to be like amateur psychiatrists some days.
Or psychologist.
Could you share with us a lesson you've learned along the way as an engineering leader?
So the lessons I've learned, besides the emotional aspect of the job, I think there was one interesting insight, is that leadership is not about having control, as it may be perceived from the outside. It's actually about letting go of control. And how I see it is that when we are leaders, we can't really make people to do things that we want them to do or be the way we want them to be. We only can lead and inspire, and people will choose to whether they follow or not. Because if we make them do something, they will quit. They will find another job. And no one likes to be told what they should do. So I found it very interesting to reframe it in a way that it's actually letting go of control of anything. And it's a leading through example. It's a leading through inspiration. It's leading through finding what motivates people, making impact and things like that. So I think that's a big lesson. And in order to do that, we need to be really authentic.
That's awesome. Yeah, a lot of people think engineering manager can just like boss people around and use their role power. They can't. That doesn't work. And so engineering, you have to like influence. It's just, it's really a great point. A lot of people don't realize the role. What is your approach to hiring, especially these days?
Yeah, I think hiring is one of the most important things we do as managers. Building team is just very hard. Like building a good team is very hard. It's also very rewarding. So hiring is very hard in the Bay Area for sure. How I go about it is I really try to build long-term relationships. So when I meet a candidate, I try to be as authentic as I can, as honest as I can about the role. What is this role currently on my team? How it is to work on my team? So I want to build that trust and find that mutual fit. I want to learn about them, what motivates them, what excites them, what they like doing, what they don't like doing. I want to let them interview me as well, what it would be to work with me and my team. Even if it doesn't work right now, there will be this relationship built on trust and transparency and kind of finding mutual fit and win-win solution later. So that's my approach. And sometimes it's hard because when we are really under pressure, we need to hire people and there's a great candidate, we can go to that sales mode and try to sell our team how great it is and everything. But I just find that being authentic and honest, it's a long-term game. That's one. And two, I like building teams that are diverse. And we talk a lot about diversity and inclusion these days. How I see the diverse team is in terms of their background and perspectives. And what I like looking at when I hire a person or a talk with a candidate, how they're solving problems, how they're looking at problems, what's their unique background is, so they would solve or look at the problem in a different way that other people on my team. And so that additive value, and Netflix is really big about this additive value of people who you're bringing to the team. Because if we have different people, different ways of solving problem, thinking through problem, different strengths, they can learn from each other, they can elevate each other, they can teach each other, and they can all inspire each other to be better versions of themselves. And I think there's lots of bias that can creep in when we hire, especially similarity bias. We usually connect easier with people who we are similar to. But I think there is a way how to use this in a good way. And I think we need to be aware of those biases, but I also think we can look at people's values and find people who share our values and almost use the similarity of values as a good thing. Because if we have team built of team members who share values, they can work better together. I think one of the sources of burnout actually is when people work in a work environment that is not aligned with their values, that they need to compromise some of their core values. So when we find people who share the values of our team, of our values, let's say curiosity, authenticity, kindness, whatever it is, like the team just feels like way more connected, even though they can have diverse backgrounds and skill sets, but they share values. And I think that's where how we can balance the similarity versus diversity.
I think that's a really a great point, because we want diversity, but also conversely, we do want the similarity in values. Do you have anything specific you might want to say with regards to hiring of women in tech? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I do. I'm a huge supporter of women in tech. I usually...
I know.
I usually prioritize reaching out to women in tech and giving them a lot of opportunities to apply for the role. And actually, I need to do way more work to reach out to them actively, and I'm okay with that. I think there are so many amazing women out there who are not maybe aware of their value or of their strengths. And so my approach to hiring women is to, I do this with everyone, but with women especially, just talk about and share, find those strengths in them and like really help them see those strengths and show how much value they can bring to the team. And I think it's important with everyone, but that's what I find myself very important for me as someone who is, you know, who maybe doesn't have that much of confidence or suffers from imposter syndrome. I do being getting positive reinforcement, positive feedback, helping me understand my value and strengths. Positive reinforcement, yeah, helping finding those strengths for other people, I think it's very important.
I think that's great. There are a lot of really amazing women in tech, and it's maybe not even, they don't know their value, but I think a lot of people also don't know the value that they bring, mm-hmm. right? And so that's mm-hmm. why I like to feature them, and I'm really happy to have you on today to share.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. What advice would you have for managers who are just starting out or new managers?
I think that I'll share maybe what I was doing and what was advice for me. First of all, reach out to other managers and ask them what it is like to be a manager. Listen to podcasts like this to just get a fuller picture of what the role, what's the responsibilities and what the role looks like. And like I said, there's maybe misperception that we will gain control or power when we become managers. But I think that's the opposite that's happening. Talk with other managers, other leaders, get their honest perspective, pros and cons. Understand your own motivation, what motivates you to become a manager. And there may be different motivations. But I think that's important to understand, like, are we doing this because we really, truly enjoy and we are curious about people and we love people aspect of a work, or we're running away from something. We think it'll be easier or we'll have more control or something like that. I think once you become a manager and trying it out, give yourself the permission to make errors as a manager are more maybe costly than errors as an engineer in terms of, because we impact people's careers and people's lives. But I'm not saying just to go and make mistakes. I'm just saying to give yourself permission that there will be mistakes and it's okay because we haven't gotten much training beforehand. We went to study computer science and engineering and we have formal training, but for management, very few of us have formal training. So it's okay to say, I'm going to make some mistakes and how can I create my own environment and network of support to A, maybe prevent from some mistakes, and two, once they happen, can help me early correct the course. Finding mentors is very important and talking with other peer managers and building relationships with other managers is very important early on. And often we just start being managers and still focus on our team, our peers who are engineers or previous peers who are engineers. And we forget that we can actually spend so much more time talking with other managers and learning from them and getting their advice.
Yeah, I think that's great. Yes, it's one of the reasons I like doing this. I love learning from other managers and talking with mm-hmm, them.
Exactly. That's why we are here.
That's why we're here. And I agree with you. When I started as a manager, I made a lot of mistakes. So I think it just happens. And I think it had a lot of bad impact, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I feel I'm much better now than I was when I started.
I actually, when I started being a manager, I told my team, like, hey, I'm a new manager. I think I'm going to make some mistakes and I'm sorry in advance for them.
That's
and
great.
And it's okay. Yeah.
I remember when we used to work together, I believe that you're very organized and you had a lot of techniques for how to manage your work. So I'm curious how this has evolved for you. What's your work day like and how do you manage your time, emails, calendar, et cetera?
I think it was a geek of time management and productivity then. So we geeked out on that together. But, oh my gosh, it's been a long journey for me. I've tried all these techniques. Nothing really worked. I constantly felt overwhelmed with feeling this, I don't have enough time to do everything I want and dropping the balls and everything. So it's challenging. At some point I realized that, and I was really, that like I was desperate. I really want to figure it out. But at some point I kind of gave up and I realized, I don't think I'm going to be able to do all the things I want. So one of my favorite quotes ever is that you can do anything, but you can't do everything. So we need to sequence the priorities. So right now, what's working for me quite well, I would say, is a mix of kind of some frameworks and ways of thinking. One is I really like the Getting Things Done framework. I really appreciated that book, and there are so many good practical advice, so much good practical advice there. I like having one list of to-dos for today, and I craft that list of priorities of every day. And then I have a list of everything else.
Okay.
And it sounds really overwhelming because then I just look at that list of everything. Sometimes they are structured into projects and I see, okay, what are my priorities? And I have monthly priorities. That's very important for me. Not many, maybe three. Hiring, some team things, some product things or something. But I have very few monthly priorities that I really need to get done. And every day I look at this big list, okay, what's priority? What can I do in order to move my main priority? And you're probably aware of there's this kind of matrix of urgent, important, not urgent. It's also very useful for me to think that I'm only focusing on things that are important. And sometimes not even urgent. But the important things, I think, the most important things. So I think the most important thing is to remember what is the most important thing. And keeping that monthly priority, very simple list, and daily revisiting, am I still working on the most important thing? What is the most important thing I can do today? That's something that's been working for me. And it's about prioritization, right? Because we cannot do everything. And what I also learned is that managing your energy level and attention, it's very important, because if we are focused and we are rested, we can do way more within 1 hour or half an hour than for the whole day when we are tired or distracted. So when I see when I'm distracted by something else, either it's my emotional state or some external events, I need to take a moment and I go and pause and meditate just to clean my head. And sometimes it's just better to go for a walk and then come back and have more focus. So there's no really point in that forcing us to be productive when we cannot be productive. Sometimes it's better just to listen to our body and take a rest. Take good sleep, eat healthy, exercise, like a very basic things, but they're really important and it's easy to sacrifice them.
Yeah, I think that's great. And now I agree with you, you're not going to get everything done. I think part of the art here is a manager's figuring out like what balls can you let drop and which ones do you have to like keep up in the air. And there's a quote I heard, which I have this printed out like near my desk, and it says like what you're saying about the Eisenhower matrix, and it's the main thing is to keep like the main thing, be focused on that. So
one of my previous managers told me this interesting framework, as we are software engineers, to keep that kind of priority list in our head, because it can change. Because that's a challenge. If we have too rigid framework of prioritization or too rigid system of time management, manager life changes from day to day. A person puts notice, there's a change of business priorities, a COVID happens, something happens, and the priorities change. So we need to be the system needs to be very agile and adaptive.
Okay. I'm really excited to ask you this question, because when we used to talk, a lot about mindfulness meditation, I remember. I don't know if this is still a practice for you, but is there a personal habit you feel has contributed to your success as an engineering leader?
Oh yeah, definitely mindfulness. And it's still a practice for me, a big part of my life. And it impacted positively my life, and both professional and personal. Let me see. My practice is definitely meditation, seated meditation. I use different apps. I can share some of the resources later, but mainly Insight Timer or Headspace. I love them. So yeah, I try to meditate every day. It's not every day, of course, but I try to meditate every day. And I can talk about benefits of meditation so long. First of all, it definitely increased my level of concentration. And then it increased my level of self-awareness of what's going on emotionally, not only in my mind, but just with emotions in my body. I also practice yoga, which helps with also just feeling the body better. And so my kind of approach these days is to, our little like kind of leadership style is to bring that holistic self to work, not only mind, because we engineers have amazing minds and we're so intellectual, but also bring our hearts and like just body and use the wisdom from emotions. And we make decisions based on emotions, right? The wisdom of how body feels, to be better team member, to collaborate better, to be more focused, to work on the, you know, even to realize what is important right now to work on, really important, not for our ego, but like just really important for the greater picture. So yeah, mindfulness and yoga, I highly recommend.
That's really awesome. You mentioned some apps, the Insight Timer and Headspace. Those are great. I've got to admit, I'm guilty. I don't use them as much as I should. But are there any other apps you'd like to recommend? They don't have to be meditation apps. Like tools, apps that you like.
Yeah, I'm not a huge phone user or apps user, but I like this one app for to-dos and tasks. It's called Things. It's very...
Yes, I've heard of it.
It's very nice. It's very nice to use. I think they put a lot of attention and intention to design and the user experience. And I like applications that feel that they are making my life easier versus making my life harder and more complex. So I like the easy, simple, and intuitive applications. And Things is really good. So I use Things for this big, you know, list of tasks that have one priority list, some projects, and I love it.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's highly recommended. Yeah, I think it is very, it's a very nicely designed. I think it's won Apple Design Awards and things like that. I know you love reading. I love reading too. And you mentioned as you were becoming a manager, you love to read. If you could recommend some books to managers, they be and why?
I'll definitely send you a long list. You can find me on Goodreads.
Yeah, I think please.
I think that I'm all, because I have this researcher part in me, I really like learning. And to default, almost, I would read all the books I could. And sometimes it's good to practice and put things in practice. The books I've been really into in the last year are the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. Have you read it? I think I've asked you.
It's been recommended. I haven't read it yet. I have to admit, but I've heard of it. Okay. Someone else recommended it.
Let me try to sell it to you. It's great. I actually even did an online training with that, kind of with the teachings from this book. It's a very different aspect of approach to leadership than many other leadership books. What I like about it is talks about the ego and the emotional side of leadership. And what I mentioned before is that I've been exploring my leadership style and incorporating the feelings and emotions. And this book talks about it. So it's really nice as a combination of several different books as well. So if you've read many books, you may find some concept in that book already there. So it's a nice kind of reframing or putting it into more kind of new application or some more actionable things. It's a very actionable, practical book. I hope I convinced you to read it. It's great.
So there's an online like course or something too?
There's a whole leadership training school around those teachings. And so there's a bunch of online trainings. There's a bunch of coaches trained within this program. So there's a whole like system. People have even, you can meet with people who practice those commitments and talk with them about it. So you can create community around this. I actually, you know, recommended my other managers at my company to read this, and they enjoy that too. So it's a great book. I really like it.
All right. Now I'm definitely going to check it out.
I get one more?
Of course. What's the next?
The other book I've recommended everyone last year was Nonviolent Communication. I actually gifted it to many friends and colleagues. It's such a, I think, known book, but I've never been inspired to read it because of the title. And I just wanted to maybe clarify if people had similar concerns to me. It's like, what? Nonviolent communication doesn't relate. Like, I'm not violent. I'm not going to read it.
Yeah. Yeah, just me.
Right. What is the title? It was like, I don't know. But it's about compassionate communication. So I would rename this book to Compassionate Communication. And it's amazing. It's a very simple framework, very actionable way of communicating needs. It talks about the difference between demanding something and requesting someone from someone. It talks about how we can use this framework to resolve conflicts, to appreciate someone. It's amazing. I've practiced this with my family, my friends, my work, and it's a really little different way than usually we communicate, but it's very effective. And yeah, it's amazing. And I think that just communication, just generally, it's such a fundamental skill for everyone, either you're a leader or not. Yeah, it's just such an important thing. If you need to learn one skill, communication.
Totally. Wow, that book sounds really interesting. And yes, it sounds like application beyond work, like for families and for your other relationships. So you've inspired me to get that one too. How do you approach the career development of your direct reports, your people in your org, growing them, developing them?
Yeah, I really like this topic. Definitely passionate about personal growth and generally growth. And it's similar to burnout. Like, once you're really experiencing something yourself, going on your, like, walking the path, it's just, you can go deeper, you can just understand this better. I practice with my team things that I've tried on my own, on myself. So for example, I share stories from my own experience. I think through storytelling, through being vulnerable, we can actually help other people grow, and we inspire other people to share their stories and their learnings and their experiences. And I see this as a kind of also mutual relationship, because I'm learning as much from my team as they can learn from me. And they can level me up as much as I can level them up. And they're amazing people. They have all the strengths and skills, and they're good at so many different things that I'm good at. So they inspire me constantly to be a better version of myself. But if I'm going to talk about a specific kind of technique I use, it's definitely coaching and feedback. And again, like this nonviolent communication, just a very transparent and honest communication. And coaching for me, it's something that I love doing. And I like actually also like teaching about coaching to other people, because I believe everyone is very well positioned to solve their own problem. I'm not the best positioned person to solve their problem. I can help them guide and think through and see some things that they may not looked at yet. And my role is just to ask questions and believe that they have everything they need in order to overcome whatever or achieve whatever they want. And sometimes it's just as easy as believing in people. And through coaching, we can show that, yes, I can see that you can do it. And some people, just like we talked about women before, like almost everyone has some kind of beliefs that are limiting them. And coaching is all about uncovering the limiting beliefs that can slow us down or make us not do things that we would like to do. And I get so much out of this coaching too, because I also often realize a lot about myself when I see other people. I see like mirror sometimes. Oh my gosh, I have similar experience. When you ask specifically about the team that I manage directly, maybe that's something that's more relevant to engineering managers, is that feedback and context sharing, because we know our reports so well, we can see them, right? How they work, what they do. I think our big responsibility as leaders and their managers is to provide them feedback, both like the constructive and positive. And I've mentioned before that the positive reinforcement is very important for so many people. So just when you see someone who's doing something great, just, you know, recognize it. And again, the nonviolent communication presents a way you can recognize someone in a way that it feels actually recognized. Like, person feels recognized versus it's just, oh, thank you, it's great. When you say, thank you, that was great, it doesn't feel that great of a recognition. So how can we recognize people for their work so they actually feel seen and recognized? And for the constructive feedback, it's often a thing that, oh, they can do something better. Everyone wants to grow. How they can grow? How they can do something better? How they can do something different? Maybe they're stuck with doing one thing the same way. Maybe our role is just to, hey, maybe you can try doing this some differently. And what is the other way you can do it? And it's a mix of coaching and feedback. But because we have a context on the team, we have already so much background on the problem space, we can be much more precise about feedback and about recognition.
Okay. No, I think that's very beautiful, right? Like you're trying to acknowledge, reward positive things. Sounds like what I got. Seems like a big focus, right? And then with regards to coaching, you're saying, let them come with the answer. That's what coaches do, right? Coaches don't provide the answer. They ask interesting questions that kind of evoke that.
And even feedback can be given in this way. And we can ask the question, what do you think went well? What do you think could have gone better? And this is such a good way of giving feedback. It's a kind of brainstorming about that together. And as their manager, you see more, so you can actually increase that awareness, like show the blind spots.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a great technique, right? Someone does something, say they give a presentation or there's a meeting. You could just jump in and say, listen, let me give you some feedback about this thing. But you say, wait, how did you think it went?
Yeah.
Or how do you think it could have gone better before you say anything?
Exactly. And I think why it's really good is because it's not only let them learn the skill of self-reflection, which is important. It builds that muscle. Okay, how can I be better? And if they have tendency to be self-critical, they will be invited to speak up about it, and that self-criticism maybe even becomes more normal and less invasive, I would say. So there are so many benefits of speaking about it. And then, so it's not only building that habit of self-reflection, of self-improvement, but also you can see how differently you see the reality than this person. And I think that's a very challenging thing as a manager, is that you can see, perceive them one way, other people can perceive them another way, and that person can perceive themselves in a different way. So when you ask them what they think, you can align on those realities. You can calibrate and clarify, you know what I mean? So if often, like, you have some expectations for this person, but this person may already think that they're already there. But when you ask them what they think, you can calibrate it.
I think that's really great. Yes, you can highlight, how'd you think it went or something? And they think it went great.
Exactly. I actually think that's it.
Okay.
And you can even go deeper. Oh, why did you think it went great? And often when they speak about it, actually, it could have gone better. It's just one question, and they can realize, and then you don't have to even say, I'm actually seeing reality differently. You can ask questions, and then they can start seeing your reality, because you can just shine the light on that situation from different perspective.
That's awesome. Agata, this has just been an amazing interview. It's been great to speak with you. You shared so many valuable things, really, seriously. Where could people go if they wanted to connect with you later, maybe ask you questions, anything?
Yes, I'm on, I think, mainly three platforms. One is Plato. I'm a mentor there, but I think it's a subscription base, so it's not available to everyone. LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn.
Nice.
The most. Yeah, I think it's just my main application. Actually, I didn't mention that, but it's my social media that I am always there. So reach out to me on LinkedIn, please. I love it. And Instagram. I started recently posting more about myself, and I'm a huge believer in integrating personal life and professional life together. I talk a little bit more about this holistic approach to leadership there. And it's a very new project for me, so I don't know how long I will keep it going. So yeah, LinkedIn, Instagram, Plato. And I'm in San Francisco Bay Area. I was happy to go for a walk.
Awesome. All right. Listen, I'll share links to those. I'm definitely going to check your Instagram feed now. Great. Again, it's been great to have you, Agata. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Vila. Great catching up with you.
Yeah, likewise.